This is Signal 337, the podcast for the innately curious and creative. Hey friends, this is Tim McKenna and you're listening to another episode of Signal 337. There's a couple things that I really enjoy about leading teams and leading people. And there are some aspects of that job that I wish I never have to do. But it comes with the territory. And honestly, it's not just a design leader thing. It is not just someone who is in a management position. It really happens with everybody. In fact, you have probably dealt with this many times yourself, whether it be a professional relationship or a personal relationship. And that is conflict resolution or conflict management. I don't really like the term conflict management because in and of itself, it's like managing the issues. Ideally, you want to be able to not have issues, but we're human and we're going to have issues. We're going to have problems. We're going to have conflict. We're going to have differences of opinion. We're going to have opinions strongly held, but when you have conflict on your team, you have conflict between two or more individuals, you have to figure out a way so that you can move past it amicably. And having the ability to manage conflicts and create some sort of resolution is an invaluable skill that, unfortunately, every time you get to practice it, it is awkward, it is difficult, and you have to do it with a whole lot of tact and delicateness. So I want to walk through the importance of conflict management, conflict resolution, and when you do it well, what can come out of it, and when you do it poorly, oh, the things that can happen. I want to give you a little bit of context for myself. Years ago, I was part of an organization that I was leading, and I had a big difference of opinion with another person in the organization in another leadership position. So we were both officers in this organization, and we both had, I would say, very differing opinions on the direction of the organization, how we were to do programming, what kind of outreach what we were doing, and also just general organization structure. We had a number of interactions that weren't really good. I didn't initiate good interactions, nor did she initiate good interactions. And part of that was due to both of our own immaturity. But what I thought was actually a very mature action on her end was that she brought in another trusted individual, someone that we both looked up to, and brought them in to mediate the conversation so that we could get past our own inflamed points of view so that we could come to some sort of resolution. And I actually really respected that because this person that came in and mediated the conversation listened to both of us and got us thinking outside of our own opinion and our own little narrow view of things, and really helped us to identify what the true issues were and how we were going to move past them. And that was a great learning experience for me. And I've also been in positions where we've had two individuals that are arguing a path or a direction that we should go with our service. And a manager comes in and just heavy-handed, we're doing this, we're going this way, that's it, no discussion, stop it. And everyone felt like they weren't heard or that there was no actual resolution to the issue. It was just very heavy-handed, here's the direction. Now, conflict management arises in every single industry, in every single role, from entry-level associate individuals to the high levels of executive, leadership as well. This is not something that is relegated to any particular education level. It knows no bounds. Conflicts happen everywhere. If you even look at the news, you will know that conflict is everywhere. But when in a business setting, conflicts are interesting in the fact that they can create what I call a social virus. And here's what I mean by that. Ideas are interesting creatures, interesting entities. They are insidious. And that sounds like a very negative term, but really when you think about it, is that an idea can grow. An idea can take on a life of its own. An idea can morph. An idea can evolve. And when you have a particular idea or particular viewpoint and you share that with others, people take that, internalize it, make it their own, and then it takes on a life of its own. This is why I call it a social virus. And when you decide not to address the issue and you decide to go down the road of spreading your ideas and not really trying to solve the problem, that social virus begins to infect others. It starts to color their perceptions and it starts to create other biases. And then you have issues with an organization of a certain thought or a certain mindset that's happening. And that is dangerous. And I don't want to sound like you have to completely manage everyone's thoughts, because that's ridiculous and you should not do that. However, that is a symptom of poor communication. The social virus is not the problem, it's the symptom. When you have an organization that doesn't value open communication, radical candor, that doesn't create a psychologically safe environment for people to feel that they can share their thoughts, their experiences, their opinions, their ideas in a safe environment, then you start to get these social viruses cropping up. Now, that in and of itself is a perfect world environment too. If you have individuals that are not feeling heard, not feeling safe because of the environment, and they're saying things and that's creating issues, cool. But then you might have just individuals, even with those safeguards in place, that are still going to do this. So this gets into a much larger conversation around how do you address communication, how do you work well with people. So conflict resolution becomes this thing, this activity that you enter into to ensure that the conflict is addressed, the issue is addressed and understood, and that you can have an amicable path to move forward. And you hear there's many ways from organizations about how they like to stem any sort of conflict. We embrace radical candor. We have strong opinions loosely held. We have an attitude towards commitment. And a lot of organizations try to set up the guardrails in place and all the psychological safety anchor points up front so that it tries to stem off conflict. And yeah, that's great. That goes a long way for organizations to let their employees, their company, to know that we take this very seriously. But it's not going to stop conflicts. There is always going to be conflicts. And oftentimes, when you have a lot of those psychological safety anchor points in your companies about, we want to be open, we value everyone's opinions, like it's not just lip service, you're going to have different kinds of conflicts arise because now there is an open playing field for everyone to work on. And healthy conflict inspires debate, inspires new ways of thinking, challenges the accepted norms, and begins to beg different questions around what if. Now, I'm not saying that all conflict is negative, but where conflict does become negative is when there is a closing off of ideas. There is a closing off of communication. And individuals don't want to think differently from their point of view or their experience. They are very focused on their own. So there is a negative conflict that becomes a silo. When someone begins to silo their thinking and silo their interactions with folks, that's when it becomes negative. And that's where you can get those social viruses coming up. Let me make this a little bit more concrete in this regard, because I realize I'm speaking in a lot of abstract terms. Say you're working at a small design studio. This design studio does everything from branding, marketing work, SEO, does some product stuff, but mainly it does branding, websites, and things like that. This is your classical view of a design studio. You may have two designers on the staff that are working on different projects, and they come to a critique, and they're looking at each other's work, and they learn that the company is going to start moving down a direction where they're going to add in more services. They're going to look at expanding their client base. And what ends up happening is that these two designers start to think about this, how they're going to support this, and what their feelings are on this new direction with the company. And what could happen is that they start to think about, well, I don't really appreciate this kind of dropping this news on us. Maybe I want to talk about this a little bit more. Maybe this is not where we should go as a company. And the other designer may be thinking, okay, that's interesting. Let's continue to grow and see where it goes. So you've already got two different opinions, and that in itself is fine. Where conflict can come into is that then they're now working on a project together. The one designer who's going with the flow and just being like, okay, we've got new work, new business developments happening. This might bring in some new opportunities. They may be working on a project for this new client that they're really interested in working with the studio. So he's coming up with designs. And the other designer who is obstinate against it is now starting to take on an adversarial approach. And it's bleeding into his interactions with the other team members. And what's ended up happening is that during critiques or during meetings, this designer is asking questions that are very pointed and somewhat unfair to ask, and is now pushing a kind of agenda of, I don't think this is the type of work that we should be doing, or this is going to dilute the work that we currently do. This is not the right areas for us to grow. Now, there is a number of ways you can handle this. In this example, you might have an art director, or you might have some sort of general manager, someone who's in a people leadership role, that could take on the mitigation of this. It doesn't always have to be a manager, though most people think that's one of the key things a manager does. It could be another designer, could be someone else. It doesn't have to be a quote-unquote people leader manager. So for this argument, we're going to say yes, it's a manager. So there's been a number of issues. The obstinate designer is just really pushing back on a lot of ideas and really questioning things to the point where it's not helpful anymore. Now it's becoming a hindrance. And the other designer is feeling like, all right, this is not helping. I can't get my work done, and I need your assistance, and I just don't agree with your views on everything. It's not your issue to be worrying about. So there's becoming an issue with these two designers, and the people leader is going to come in, and here's ways that you could deal with it. If you're the people leader and you're managing these two designers, say you're the art director, a good leader will listen, will create an environment that is safe, that is confidential, that is welcoming. And that sets the tone to enable communication. Conversely, you could come in and be like, here's the ground rules. Here's how we're going to do stuff. I need to hear from you. I need to hear from you. That comes in with a very adversarial role and tone that introduces a third voice into the conversation. And what you really want to try to do successfully is try to be as impartial and listen and create an opportunity and an atmosphere where everyone can share. So if you do that versus the adversarial tone of let's get this hell hashed out, then you create an opportunity for people to really delve into what's really bothering them. So let's continue the example. You're creating a space for these two designers to really hash out and talk about what issues that they're having. you might actually have the obstinate designer sharing with their coworkers, I don't think this is the greatest idea. And then this idea of this obstinance is starting to show through in other designers' work. So that's that social virus coming through. And we're now seeing that this is not working. The team dynamics aren't working. And how everyone is working together is not functional. So the art director will come in, create an opportunity, create a space and environment for everyone to share. And we'll listen to both sides. You need a high level of emotional intelligence to be able to break down some of those barriers that both parties now have created. Because out of a perceived threat, they're going to create their own barriers internally so that they don't feel like they're going to be attacked and be feeling like they're being threatened in this regard. So having a high emotional intelligence and practicing candor in this regard can help to break down those barriers. So how would this art director do this? Talking to the obstinate designer, you would say something along these lines. So I'm understanding that you have some ideas and some feelings around some of the new direction that we'll be taking. I would really like to know and understand how you are seeing things and some of the concerns that you have, because I really want to understand your position on things. Something along those lines. That is a very tactful way to invite the individual to share their feelings. The key things you don't want to do then, once you do that, is interrupt. You want to listen, actively listen, and you want to physically show that you're listening. Don't be on your phone. Look at them. Don't bore your eyes into their skull, but look at them and have your body language set up in a way that you can show that you are actively engaged with them and you're listening to them. Don't let the other party interrupt. Give them the space and the time and ask clarifying questions. Again, but don't interrupt. If there's something that's said, take a note. And then once they are done saying their piece for everything, ask those clarifying questions. Okay, you said that you don't feel that the business development plan is in line with our company. Can you explain that a little bit to me? You have to use language that is inviting so that people will want to share. Naturally, humans, we love to talk about ourselves, so enable that. Don't take the adversarial approach of, tell me what you mean by this. Tone, body language, and what is actually said, that can all play into the factor of how well someone wants to participate in a conversation. Once you're done with that individual, you move on to the other individual. And then you do the same thing. Share with me your experiences, how you're feeling about things. Don't make it about how the other person is affecting you. Just let them tell you the issues. Don't assume that everything. So when you let both parties talk and share their experiences, share their worries, share their concerns, then you can start to ask probing questions to really challenge their thinking on this. And it's not meant to be in a way to be a threat, but it's to dig into more to understand. Maybe the obstinate designer is really concerned about the new work that we're going to take on is going to be something that he's not very familiar with. And he's afraid that this is going to force him into areas he doesn't want to work in, say like SEO or something. That's a fair point. Maybe it is a fear that we're going to grow too quickly and the work is going to be untenable. That's a legit fear as well. So you want to be able to ask those probing questions to get at the kernels of truth of the fear that is creating this obstinance. And you want to do the same with the other as well. And then you want to make connections. You want to build bridges back between both parties. So if the obstinate designer is really concerned about how the work is going to become untenable, and the other designer is worried or thinking about, hey, this is actually going to keep us very busy, and keep us working in a way that we're going to have a system, a flow for everything, then the art director could be saying, designer A over here, is thinking about how this could work. Maybe the both of you can work together on how we can create this flow, how we can create this in a way so that we are keeping busy, but at the same time, we're not overburdening the staff. Why don't you two think about what that would look like? So that is the bridge creation. That is a way that you can create goodwill and everyone feels heard, because you're now coming up with ideas and putting it back into their court so that they can then take it and make something good out of it. You don't want to solve everyone's problems. You want to give people the ability to solve their own problems. So by doing that, you're helping to ease the tensions. You're helping to create understanding, and you're building that trust back up between all the individuals. This is a happy path. This is truly a happy path. A lot of this also depends on the individual as well. You might have some great, level-headed, completely understanding folks that work for your company. Not everyone is completely level-headed and completely understanding. And when you have individuals that are just obstinate by nature, you have to approach it a little bit differently. You might have individuals that are very steady and don't like to rock the boat. And because they are feeling like they're being pulled in too many directions, they retreat from conflict. And that creates issues. You might have people that are very dominant in their personality traits, and they tend to steamroll conversations. They tend to overshadow everybody. You may have some people that are very exuberant and are very much like the life of the party in this. They are excited about every single thing, but they don't follow through with everything. And then you have your folks that are I would call the rule citers. They are very focused on process, and they're very focused on information and data, and they don't like to make any sort of decision unless they have all of the data to make a decision. This is going back into DISC personality traits, but you have to approach individuals different. There's no one-size-fits-all conflict resolution methodology, but there are some practices that will definitely help you to address and be able to talk to those different individuals with those different traits. The biggest one is practicing emotional intelligence and understanding how to interact with different people. The thing that I always come back to is that as an impartial party trying to smooth out the conflicts, you want to let everyone talk as much as possible. You want to take notes. You want to be able to understand. You want to listen to understand. You want to speak to understand. You want everyone to almost solve their own problems. And I will say 9 times out of 10, people usually just get in their own way, their own thinking, their own stuck. And I think that the other one time, then there are some serious issues that need to be addressed. But a lot of times, people are concerned, there's a fear that they have of the unknown. Something new, different, is causing a fear. And that can come out sideways in all sorts of ways of criticizing the business, criticizing individuals, criticizing direction, criticizing how others on the team are performing, criticizing leadership. It comes out in all several different ways, and a lot of it is fear-based. But when you allow them the ability to share their fears and share their ideas in a way that is safe, they can explore them, they can think about them differently, and all they needed was somebody else to be able to listen and bounce those ideas off of them. Now, like I said, this is all a happy path. But if you have individuals that are very obstinate, that don't want to change their position, that don't want to look at things differently, then that is another situation. You have to have more concerted talks around commitments, paths forward, while not coming down on them with the hammer, being like, thou shalt do this and or else hit the road. You do want to make sure that this is the direction, this is where we're going, and we want to make sure that you're helping to contribute and committing towards that as well. And that can be into that realm where it's really awkward now, where you want everything to go well, and you want everyone to be able to come to some sort of happy resolution. But it's not always going to be the case. And at that point, there you need to have the strong opinions, loosely held kind of mentality, I like to call it. If you have strong opinions, great. You're entitled to strong opinions. But in a position where you're at, where you need to commit to some work, whether you agree to it or not, you have a choice. You have a choice to continue that work or not. And this sounds very much, hey, it's either my way or the highway. And I'm trying to understand, I'm trying to say this in the most eloquent way around this, because there are legitimate things that individuals might want to leave a company for, and some of the concerns and some of the issues that one person or a number of people may have with a company direction or a policy or a commitment, that could be enough for them to leave. And that's fine. That is okay. They should not be demonized for that. If you look at the most recent example with Basecamp, the Basecamp leadership very much said, and this is a distilled, watered down, too long didn't read version of this, is that, hey, we're not going to have political talk at work. And that pissed off a lot of people. And there's multiple camps on both sides saying, no, you're there at work to work. And other people are like, no, all of this stuff and talk includes political speech and political topics, and that affects the work that we do. What ended up happening is that the leadership at Basecamp, Jason Fried and the other guy, basically put out a blog post saying, look, here's our new policies and stuff. And if you don't like it, cool, hit the road. And a lot of people did. Now, they're not wrong. Basecamp, in a lot of respects, isn't wrong. Basecamp doesn't really come off as a great company that I'd want to work for. But if they want to create that environment, they're going to attract those individuals that are okay with that environment. They got to sleep in the bed that they've made. But other folks, there's no amount of conflict resolution that's going to change their opinions and change the way that they feel. So they made a conscious effort and they left. There is no ill will that should be sent to them at all. That's completely fine. And they should not be demonized, and they should not be persecuted because they decided to leave a company based on these different policies. That's fine. There's no amount of conflict resolution that's going to save that. But that's an extreme example. When we talk about the everyday work that we do as designers, we do as business professionals, there's going to be decisions, there's going to be commitments, and there's going to be directions that are going to be given that you do need to challenge and make better. But when it really comes down to it, when you go through the conflict resolution stages and trying to smooth things out and trying to create an opportunity, an environment for people to feel heard, if it still hasn't gotten in a way that is going to be solving or resolving the problem, you're at a different phase then. Conflict resolution isn't going to save that. Now, this is not the most sexy topic. This is not the most highly sought after topic, but I'm telling you that it's one of those topics that every organization that works with people and has people that work for them go through this. This is just part of the DNA of business in a lot of respects. It's the part of the DNA of life in general. This is not just at the business level. This is also with your friends. This is with your family. Having conflicts are just natural parts of how we operate as individuals. And there are a number of techniques and a number of ways to approach a situation, all tailored on the individuals that you're discussing the problems with. You're not going to solve every conflict. You're not going to have a rosy, positive conflict resolution every single time. But in the business case, it is an admirable effort to minimize conflict as much as possible. And it is imperative that when conflict does arise, that you don't try to sweep it under the rug, that you don't try to steamroll it. It's imperative that you listen. And you will find many times that sometimes outside of the fear-based decisions and the thoughts that create conflict and it arises from that, but many times you might find valuable ideas to the contrary, valuable things that actually help your business grow, because many times a lot of professionals want to see the business grow. They have a vested interest in your company growing. So their obstinance or conflicts that arise from certain decisions, they need to be addressed, and you need to create that psychological safety anchor points for people to share their thoughts. Because what you don't want to create is an environment of silence where no one is talking, because then that becomes the problem as well. You create an environment where no one wants to contribute, no one wants to collaborate, because they feel like there's no point. There's going to be a decision, it's not going to be listened to, and we are going to continue doing this. And then when you have everyone in the room that doesn't want to contribute and talk at all, you're in a very dangerous place. I've gone on around how conflict resolution is an important skill that anyone can have and anyone should develop so that you are able to create positive outcomes. I've talked about some of the things that you don't want to do in conflict resolution that is just going to hamper your efforts and make the situation worse. I've talked a little bit about how there are going to be some issues that no amount of resolution is going to fix, and how then parties need to separate and take their different paths. But ultimately, you really want to focus as a business, you want to be able to focus on how do we have healthy, positive conflict resolution so that you're creating an engaged audience. You're the people that you work with, your employees, your coworkers. You want them to be engaged. You want them to feel that they're contributing positively to the organization. And the way that you can do that, along with all those other anchor points, is to have very healthy conflict resolution practices. With all of that, hopefully you won't have any conflicts today. But if you do, you can always refer back to this episode. And I would love to hear from you about situations that you've been in the past where you've helped to resolve conflicts, or maybe how you've approached a situation and maybe you were wrong, and how did you learn from that? I know from myself, I have been in a number of situations where my fear has manifested in ways that, quite frankly, were stupid and did not help me in the least. And if I only took up the ability to have conversations with folks and voice my thoughts and ideas in a healthy way, it would have played out a lot better. I am by no means a saint. Quite the opposite. But with all of that, I really appreciate everyone who listens to the show. We're doing some great new things with the show. We are committing to a weekly episode, so every Monday you're going to be hearing a new episode. And take a look at, we're now on LinkedIn as a company page. So you can now follow Signal 337 as a company page and get all the posts there. And you can also get us on Twitter at Signal 337. So again, I really appreciate it. Everything that I share in the episodes is from my perspective, my observations. They're not indicative of past companies that I've been with. Even if I talk about some of the personal experiences, this is all my experience on everything. So not indicative of past or current companies that I work at. And with that, I really appreciate it. So thank you so very much, and take care.